Friendly faces. All right, my friends. Today we're going to talk about Cheshbon HaNefesh, and I titled the this year "Overthinking and Underthinking." I said to my daughter last night. I said to one of our daughters. I said, you know, I'm speaking tomorrow about Cheshbon HaNefesh, about overthinking, about underthinking. And I said, do you have any good sources for me? Any good stories? Any good ideas? She's a big thinker. And I guess I underthought the topic when I picked it, so I wasn't sure exactly what we were going to learn today. So she says to me, "Daddy, you know I'm a big overthinker, so let me think about it and I'll get back to you." So I said, "Listen, I'm on a time frame here. We have to figure this out. But I have some thoughts and I want to share them with you." And I was inspired to talk about this because how could we go through what we're going through right now without stopping to think? I know I'm not saying any great chiddush by suggesting that, but to take the time to analyze what's going on in the world and to do it in a way that actually makes sense. Like Rebbetzin Cement said, to try to be normal about it. And being normal about it means not only making a cheshbon hanefesh, but knowing how to make a cheshbon hanefesh. And I think we fall into these traps of sometimes overthinking things or sometimes underthinking things, not thinking enough about things. And that's what I want to try to work through together today and try to explore that together. There was a Yid who once came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and he said, "Rebbe, I love you so much. You're so amazing. I'm so inspired by you. But I'm not a Lubavitcher. I don't feel that I'm ever going to be a Lubavitcher. I don't fully identify with Chabad, but I want to be one of your Hasidim." And he said, "I don't look the part. I don't dress the part. I'm never going to wear the hat the Lubavitchers wear, and I don't wear a long coat. Can I still be your Chassid?" And he said to him, Lubavitcher Rebbe said to this fellow, he said, "Any Jew who wakes up in the morning and asks himself or herself, how can I be better today than I was yesterday, is a true chassid," the Rebbe said of me. If you want to be a chassid of Lubavitcher Rebbe, you have to ask yourself one question: what can I do to be better? And to be a chassid of Hashem and to be a good Jew means to ask ourselves, how can I be better today than I was yesterday? And that's what we call making a cheshbon hanefesh. Making an accounting of our lives, to analyze and to contemplate and to try to figure out, as so many have said, you know, what is Hashem saying to us through these last 7-8 weeks that we've been experiencing. But again, I want to focus on not so much what the punchline is, because I'm not a prophet and I don't know what Hashem is saying to us, but I want to talk about the process by which we make the cheshbon hanefesh. So let's start with underthinking. Let's talk about underthinking. It would be a tragedy, and I don't use that word lightly, but I really think it would be, plain and simple, a tragedy. It would be a terrible, terrible failure if we somehow went back to life when this was all said and done, totally unchanged, failing to learn some lesson, some takeaway, something that we could apply to our lives. And that's what we call underthinking. If I ignore what's going on in the world right now, and I don't try to figure out what is Hashem saying. And again, it's not so much about figuring out the definitive answer as to why God brought coronavirus, a pandemic on the world. But it's stopping to think, what could I possibly learn from this? If we look away and we fail to learn something from it, that would be a terrible, terrible, terrible tragedy. The Rambam writes in the first parak of Hilchos Tanyos, the laws of fasting. The Rambam writes some very, very strong and powerful words. The Rambam writes, "Mitzvas asei min haTorah lizok ulahariya bechatzotzos al kol tzara shatavo al tzibur." Whenever there's some type of communal, and Rambam's talking about just Klal Yisrael, my own neighborhood. If something's happening in Bergenfield, New Jersey, so we have to sound the trumpets, we have to scream, we have to cry out to Hashem over this. Right? When there's a tzara that befalls the tzibur, it's a mitzvah in the Torah to daven. To scream, to cry out. Shenemar al tzar hatzora eschem. When an enemy lays siege upon you, and it could be a physical enemy, it could be a spiritual enemy, it could be a virus. But when something's happening in the world, when the tzibor, and here the world has become one big tzibor on a certain level, when the tzibor is facing a difficulty, there's a mitzvah to try to cry out to Hashem, to not look the other way and pretend that nothing's happening when something big is happening in the world. And the Rambam continues in Halacha Beis, "V'davar ze midarchei ha-tshuvahu." This is an integral part of the tshuva process for a person to reflect on what's happening in the world, to cry out to Hashem, to beg Hashem to take it away, to daven to Hashem that it shouldn't befall us ever again. And then the Rambam writes, and these are the key words, in Halacha Gimel, this is in the first chapter, of Hilchos Tanios, the laws of fasting. The Rambam writes in Halacha Gimel, Aval, im lo yizaku, velo yariu. If you don't cry out, if you don't scream, if you don't stop to ask what's going on, ele yomru, but God forbid, instead you say, davar ze mi minaga olam, eira lanu. This is just the way that things are. Life happens, you know, this is just how it is. Vitzara zo nikra nikres, and this is all happenstance, a bad spin of the die, or the heavenly dice. Harezu derech achzari, this is the way of cruelty. You're a cruel person. Vigores lahem li dabik maseim harayim, and you cause yourself and others to change their evil ways. Vitosif hatzara tzaras acheros, and then unfortunately you bring upon yourself, you're essentially asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to strike you that much harder. Because maybe then you'll finally get it. As the Torah says, V'halachtem imi bakeri, as the Tochacha rebukes us at the end of Chumash Vayikra, if you walk with me, bakeri, if you say it's happenstance, things happen, you know, it's random, then Hashem says, V'halachti imachem b'chamas keri, then I'll respond to you with an even greater, you know, accident, and I'll make you pay for it. Klomar kasha'avi aleichem tzara kedei shetashuva, when I bring a penalty upon you, suffering upon you, to try to awaken you to tshuva, im yom rushu keri, if you say that it's random, osif lachem chamas oso keri, then Hashem says, I need to strike you that much harder, because maybe I'll wake you up from your spiritual slumber, and then maybe you'll finally make a chajman and nefesh, and maybe you'll realize that I run the world, and maybe you'll do tshuva, and maybe you'll cry out, and maybe you'll actually make a change. Again, I'm not here to offer specific ways that we can change, but it's incumbent upon us to not underthink at a time like this. We have to stop and think, period. We have to come away from this experience having learned something. I remember, again, I don't see who's on the screen right now, but I assume most of you are in college, and I remember when I was in YU, I remember being in college, and I remember the morning of September 11th. How could one ever forget? I remember it, unfortunately, too well. The utter shock of the Twin Towers being attacked, the falling of thousands of people losing their lives. And I remember, and I share it very often, what Rav Avram Shor, Shlita, shared, an insight that he shared after September 11th. He spoke, it's printed in one of his svarim, and he shared a vart from the Yid HaKadosh from Pershischa, the holy Jew from Pershischa, Rav Yaakov Yitzchak from Pershischa, passed away in 1813. The Yid HaKadosh from Pershischa said the following insight on the words of David HaMelech. David HaMelech says, Mishamayim Hishmata Din, Eretz Yara Vishakta. It's in Tehillim chapter 76, Ayin Vav. Mishamayim Ishmata Din, from the heavens you heard a judgment. Eretz Yara, the earth trembled, was afraid. Vishakta, and it was subdued. The Pashup Shad, I think the Mefarshim say, the Pashup Shad in the Pasuk is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to defend Klal Yisrael from its enemies. So Mishamayim Ishmata Din, the world heard, the enemies of Klal Yisrael heard that Hashem meant business. And then Eretz Yara, the earth trembled, people got the message. Vishakta, and their war against Bnei Yisrael, their antagonism towards Bnei Yisrael, Shakta, calm down, it's subdued. But if you read the Pasuk, it's a strange phrase. Eretz Yara Vishakta. The earth was afraid and was calm. Usually fear and calm don't go together. Sheket, calm. It's almost like this Yishuv Hadas. So what does it mean, Eretz Yara Vishakta? The Gemara itself asks the question. Im Yara Lama Shakta, Im Shakta Lama Yara. It's a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Peches. How could it be? Yira and Sheket don't go together. Now the truth is, in the aftermath of 9/11, there really was this very eerie Sheket, this very painful silence. And everything, when all the dust settled, right, and it was clear that there weren't going to be many survivors, sometimes that silence itself is the most terrifying thing of all. But what is Yara Vishakta? How do those terms go together? So the Yid HaKadosh explained that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a message. Mishamayim Hishmata Din. Of course, Rav Shor was talking in the form of two airplanes crashing into massive skyscrapers, into huge buildings. Mishamayim Hishmata Din. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a message. Again, what the message is, I don't know. But Hashem sent a message. Eretz Yara, if we fear, if we get the message, if we're shaken by it, then Shakta. And Hashem doesn't have to patch us again. Hashem doesn't have to slap us again. Hashem doesn't have to send a punishment to try to wake us up. As long as it's clear, Yara, that we got the message, then yes, Vishakta, then there can be a calm after the storm. But God forbid, if we don't absorb the lesson, if we walk out of here unchanged, again, failing to internalize whatever it is that Hashem is trying to say to us, if we just adapt to this new reality and call it our new normal, and after about 7-8 weeks, you know, we've gotten used to certain things, there's nothing normal about that. And that's a failure to internalize the message. And that's what the Rambam calls derech achzarius, losing our sensitivities and becoming numb and looking away and not really, you know, as the numbers and the death count continue to grow and tragedies continue to unfold, to just say, I'm so burnt out from all of this because I can't go about my regular schedule, that's insufficient. That's called underthinking. That's not being thoughtful enough and being considerate enough about what's happening in the world right now. Becoming numb and choosing to lose our sensitivities because I don't want to think about what the message is. I don't want to get the message is unfair and it's cruel, the Rambam says. Being cruel to ourselves and being cruel to those around us because we're bringing upon ourselves further tzaras by failing to get the message. It was reported many years ago in the secular Israeli media. It made such a storm, this news report. The Lev Simcha, the fifth Ger Rebbe, was visited. It was a time in Eretz Yisrael there was tremendous, tremendous tension between, you know, the Haredi camp and the secular camp, so to speak. And there were a group of academics, of professors, who came to speak to the fifth Ger Rebbe. One of the things that had caused the big stir, there was a woman's choir that had performed at the Kotel. And obviously, those from Jews who were sensitive to Kol Isha, to the prohibition of women singing in public in the presence of men, they were all up in arms, and especially, you know, at such a holy place, at the Kotel, to have a woman's choir. It was a big tumult in Eretz Yisrael. And the media reported about this interaction that took place between these professors and the Lev Simcha, Rav Simcha Bunim, the fifth Ger Rebbe. So one of the professors said to the Lev Simcha, he said, "You Jews, you religious Jews, you're so like old fashioned. Like, what's with this Kol Isha?" The professor says, "I hear women sing all the time. It has no effect on me. Why are you Haredim so crazy? Making it as if it's like some type of perverse thing. Like, what's wrong with you that you can't listen to a woman sing without having lewd thoughts or something inappropriate entering into your mind?" And the Rebbe said, "It's a good question." And the Rebbe said, let me ask you the following question. Who would you say is more advanced? Who's more old-fashioned, so to speak? Who's more advanced? Who's more civilized? And who's more primitive in the following scenario?" He says, "Imagine a Bedouin who walks across the desert, boiling hot sand, and he's able to walk across it with the rocks and the debris, totally barefoot, and it doesn't bother his feet. And imagine a sophisticated European comes to that same desert, takes off his shoes. The sand is too hot, the rocks are too bumpy, right? He's too sensitive, his foot is too sensitive to it. So who would you say is the primitive one? Is it the Bedouin who has developed the, in quote, sensitivities to be able to walk on broken shards of glass and to walk on the hot sand and to be able to step on the rocks, and his feet are so numb from doing it for so long that he's able to do so without any pain? Or would you say that the scholarly European fellow is the one who's truly, you know, more civilized, who's truly more advanced?" And the professor sat there for a minute or two, and he said, "Rebbe, you're so right. Your answer is so right. Because losing our sensitivities doesn't make you more advanced. Right? The fact that the Torah tells us that there's a halacha called Kol Isha, and that there are people who have maintained the sensitivity to the sanctity of a woman's voice, that's not ancient, that's not primitive, that's very refined, that's very sophisticated. So again, I give this as an example of becoming numb to what's happening in the world right now. You could say, is, you know, I've advanced because I've learned to deal with it, but I'm really just ignoring the message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending. And therefore making ourselves numb to the pain that we're supposed to be feeling in the world right now is not a maila. And therefore, being insensitive and not thinking enough and not making a cheshbon hanefesh is a terrible failure. Yes, it's true. You could say, Moshe Tzvi, I'll argue on you. I'll argue on myself for a moment. You could say that during Makas Bechoros, Hashem said, close your door, lock the door, stay inside, and just stay safe. That's the whole avoda. Okay, sort of true. And you can quote the pasuk, the Navi in Yeshayah, in Perech Avav. Listen to this pasuk. It's the exact opposite of what I'm telling you. Lech Ami.
Hashem says through the Navi Yeshaya, go, my people, bo bechadarecha, go into your rooms, usigur delascha ba'adecha, and close the door and lock the door behind you. Chavi chima'at rega ad yavur zam. Hide yourself for a moment until the wrath has passed over. So maybe the avodah is on a certain level. Just lay low. Just hang tight, you know? Like those cheap conversations we sometimes have, you know, in passing. As we have our, those of us who get out for a couple of seconds and see people at a safe social distance, say, how's it going? You know, hanging in there. Maybe that's what the Navi's saying. Maybe the avodah is lock your door, stay safe, keep others safe, and just hang in there. That might be true on a practical level, and that might be true on a physical level, but on a spiritual level and on an emotional level, that's not what the Navi's saying. The Navi's not saying lock the door and just wait for it to be over so you can go back to having a good time in the world. We have to stop and we have to think. And we have to take stock of this whole experience and figure out what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to us. I know that some of you are very, very busy right now. I know that, I can assume that to be correct, and I know that from some of you directly, that life is really busy for you right now. You're finishing up school, you have finals, you're figuring out a lot of different things. On a certain level, some of us are busier than ever. But I also know, I can say with confidence, that some of us have more time maybe on our hands than ever before. And the question is, what do I do with that time? If I'm not totally numb, maybe now, more than ever, I actually have a chance to do something which, if you would have asked me 2 months ago, I would have said, oh, I wish I had the time to just, you know, to sit back and think in my room. Well, now it's an opportunity for us to make a cheshbon hanefesh. Mitzrayim is the root of all gullus. We know that's the first place that we as a people, the Jewish people, experience an exile. The Belzer Rebbe once said that there's three types of gullus. A person could be in a state of gullus from one's land, a physical gullus, a physical exile, that right now I'm speaking to you from Bergenfield, New Jersey, and not Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. That's one form of exile, that we're not together in Eretz Yisrael right now with the Beis HaMikdash. That's one form of gullus. There's a type of gullus on a Bein Adam L'Chaveira level. The fact that we're distant from each other, that's true both physically, and all the more so when we become emotionally disconnected from each other. Klal Yisrael is not united, that's another form of gullus. But the Belzer Rebbe said, you know what the worst gullus is? On a certain level, the worst gullus of all is being in a state of gullus from oneself, of being disconnected from oneself, not making time to, so to speak, have a conversation with oneself. And in Mitzrayim, they were experts at making us so numb, so busy, that there was simply no time to think at all. The Ramchal writes in his famous work, Mesilas Yesharim, in the second parak, that Paro increased the work over and over and over again for one goal, lahafriya liba mikol hisbonenis b'koach hasmadas ha'avodah ha'bilti mafsekas. Paro wanted to distract us from hisbonenis, from thinking, by being so busy. I'm always so busy, I have so much work, and I'm not making light of it. I know a lot of people are complaining about the fact that college got harder ever since I stopped going to college. Like, you would think that at home it would be a little bit easier, but all the teachers are now piling on more and more work at the end of the semester because they assume that everyone has so much free time. So it could be you're busier than ever, but it could be you could also carve out time maybe now more than ever. Paro piled work and more work and more work on Klal Yisrael so that they became so numb they couldn't even think about how they were living their lives. Kain hi atzas hayetzar hara mamish al b'nei ha'adam. And says the Mesilas Yesharim, that's exactly what the Yetzer Hara does. We become so busy that we just don't have time to think. And the things that we're supposed to be thinking about, we don't have time for it. And then a remarkable thing happens at the end of the second parak of Shemos. Vayehi b'yamim harabim ahem v'yamas melech Mitzrayim. All of a sudden, Paro dies. That same Paro, who the Ramchal was just describing as piling work and more work and more work. Paro dies. Vayeanchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avoda vayizaku. And like the Rambam told us, when you're suffering, you're supposed to be screaming, crying out, and all of a sudden Paro dies, and b'nei Yisrael, finally, they let out a scream. Why is b'nei Yisrael crying? Paro's dead. You know, it should be a big celebration. Why are b'nei Yisrael crying and screaming at this moment? So Rashi says maybe Paro didn't actually die. Maybe Paro had saras and he's bathing in Jewish blood and things are actually getting worse for the Jewish people. Maybe, like the Ramban says, that the Jews were afraid maybe the next king's going to be even worse. Maybe that's what they're crying about. Then Nitziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the great Rosh Yeshiva from Balazhin,
in his commentary on Chumash, in the Hemek Davar, Shmos Perek Bey says an amazing thing. He says, you know why they were crying? He said it was the first time the Jews finally, they finally like woke up a little bit. You know what happened? Paro died. And what happened when Paro died? You know what happened in Mitzrayim? They declared it a day of mourning throughout the land. In honor of the king, everything shut down. Right? Everyone, all businesses shut down, even the essential ones. Everything closed. For Hespedim to be able to properly mourn Paro, the banks were closed and the post office was closed. Everything was closed. And the Jewish people finally sat down for a minute and caught their breath. And for the first time in so long, they said, you know what? We can actually think about what we've been going through. And they broke down crying. They were able to actually stop and think for a second. And it dawned upon them that this is not okay. And I need to figure out why I'm in Mitzrayim. How did we end up in Mitzrayim? And therefore, when we have that opportunity to stop and to think and to just pause for a minute, it's such a big opportunity. It's such a big opportunity. I know we're busy and I know we have things going on. And I know we're anxious about a lot of different things. But this is an opportunity that Hashem has given us to, so to speak, take a break from our regular lives and to think. And again, like the Rambam said, it would be cruel not to. That's one side of the equation. That's underthinking. That's failing to think enough. But what's the other side of the equation? What's the other side of the trap that we sometimes fall into? It's something that we call overthinking. It's where we think too much and we worry too much about something. And we make something which is not supposed to be so complicated, we make it a little bit too complicated. I remember I once saw a quote from Charlie Brown, from Charles M. Schulz, the creator of Peanuts. So Charlie Brown, it goes like this. Charlie Brown says, sometimes I lie awake at night and I ask, where have I gone wrong? And then a voice says to me, this is going to take more than one night. You know, like you're lying in bed at night thinking like, I got to figure my life out. And then, you know, that inner voice is like, yeah, we're not going to solve that in the next 15 minutes. This is going to take some time to work through. And when I read that quote, I thought to myself, you know what, maybe yes, maybe no. Yeah, maybe figuring out life and figuring out what the lesson is, my personal message that I'm supposed to take from 8 weeks of quarantine. Yeah, maybe it is really complicated. And maybe it's going to take a lot of thinking. But you know what? Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe I'm making it much more complicated than it needs to be. Maybe actually HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just telling me, just like be honest for half a second here, and you'll know exactly what you need to work on. It's not a chiddush to you. Don't make it so complicated. Don't bury yourself in shiurim and articles of people trying to solve it for you. Maybe we're drowning out our own voice by overanalyzing things to the point that we actually make any changes because there's just too many voices in the conversation. Once commented that Sfiras HaOmer, you know, Klal Yisrael have a practice not to listen to music during Sfiras HaOmer. Okay, live music, a cappella music. Okay, each person has to figure out what the halacha actually is. But one of my friends once commented that Sfira is the time to stop listening to everyone else's negunim to be able to listen to your own. Maybe that's what Sfira Sa'omer is. Maybe we come out of Mitzrayim and we're on our way to Kabbalah Satorah and Hashem says, okay, for 7 weeks, I want you to pause. I want you to like take the AirPods out of your ear for like a couple of seconds and just listen to your own voice. Just listen. And you might say, well, okay, I'm gonna think a lot during these days. But maybe we're thinking too much. Maybe we make the sugya too complicated, you know. Maybe I'm so busy trying to figure out the exact message that Hashem has for coronavirus for the world that I forget to just say, okay, well, like simple. Let's keep it simple for a second. What does Hashem want from me? What are the mistakes that I keep making over and over again, and what do I need to do to fix them, without overanalyzing it, without overthinking it? A student once came to Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, one of the great architects of Torah in America, Rav Shraga Feivel, who built the Torah Vadas. And he asked Rav Shraga Feivel, he said, Rebbe, what's a good Musar Sefer for me to learn? What are some of the most important Musar works for a person to learn? And Rav Shraga Feivel said to him, he said, a Musar Sefer can help you, it's true, it's important. A Jew should be learning Sifrei Musar, but true Musar is that which a person gives himself. You don't need to find it in a book, you don't need to hear it in someone else's shiur. You don't need to wait for someone to write that article that explains, you know, all the proofs and reasons why he thinks or she thinks that coronavirus is caused by this or that. Just be honest with yourself. Don't overanalyze it. Just analyze it enough to the point where you say, you know what, Hashem, I got it. I got the message. I understand what you're trying to say to me. Rav Shraga Feivel, they asked him one time, they said, you know,
Rebbe, a lot of mashgichim and a lot of magide shirim and a lot of people who give musar shmuzin, they try to give their message over through psukim and mamari chazal, and you don't do that. You kind of just like talk to us when you give a musar shmuz. And Shraga Faiva looked at them and he said, I don't understand. They want me to put their mistake into a pasuk? Like what's the point of that? Just be honest about what you need to work on. I mean, that's what I've been doing for the last, half hour with you. Bringing psukim and mamari chazal to try to make a point. But the truth is, we don't need any of this. And you don't need to listen to me. We need to listen to ourselves. We need to stop listening to other people's music and just listen to our own voice. To get out of our own gullus. And stop being so busy. And sometimes we're busy trying, to analyze the situation. Just keep it simple. What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want from me? Why did the Kadosh Baruch Hu put me into this situation? I don't have to solve the pandemic for the world. I don't have to answer on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. But to be able to what? To not overthink it to the point that I don't actually make any changes in my life, but keep it a little bit more simple. And to just say, okay, Hashem, I got it. Let's keep it postured. I know what you're saying to me. You asked me to slow down because maybe I'm being a little too busy, and now I have a chance to think. And I'm going to take advantage of that opportunity. This Shabbos is Parshas Emor. Happens to be my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. You can wish me Mazel Tov after the Shir if you want. But in Parshas Emor, we learn, in Parachov Gimel, if you have a Chumash handy, you could play along. We learn about the Jewish holidays. And when going through the calendar year, it starts with Pesach, and then it talks about the Omer, and then it talks about Shavuos, and then it talks about Rosh Hashanah, and then it talks about Sukkot. It goes through Mamish in order of our calendar year. But it's interesting. How does it begin? Parachov Gimel, V'yadaber Hashem al Moshe Lemur, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, V'amarta Aleihem Moadei Hashem. Hashem says, Moshe, I want you to tell Bnei Yisrael about the holidays. And what's the first holiday it talks about? Something that you probably never thought of as a holiday. It starts off by talking about Shabbos. Sheishes yamim te'aseh malacha, uveyom ha'shvi, Shabbos, Shabboson, mikra kodesh, kol malacha lo sa'asu, Shabbos hila Hashem b'chol moshu seichem. And the Mepharshim are bothered by this. Shabbos is not one of the holidays. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, I want to address a second question that also is asked by the Mepharshim over here. Question number one, again, why is Shabbos mentioned amongst the holidays? It's not one of the holidays. I mean, I guess you could think of it as a weekly holiday, right? But it's not really part of the calendar year. It's not one of the Mo'adei Hashem in that sense. That's a question that's, again, already addressed by much earlier sources, but Rav Moshe Feinstein addresses it as well. And he asks a second question. Rav Moshe says a little bit later in Parachov Gimel, all of a sudden, very strangely, right between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah, it talks about giving tzedakah in the form of leaving matnos aniyim. Uvekutzrechem es ketzir artzechem, when you're harvesting your field, don't finish off the corner of your field, rather leave a corner for the poor. If you drop some of your stalks while you're harvesting, leave it for the poor. And then it goes back to talking about Rosh Hashanah and eventually to Sukkot and to Shmini Atzeres. And Rav Moshe Feinstein again wonders, why is this halacha about matnos aniyim, about supporting the poor, stuck in here in the middle of a discussion about the regalim? So I'll tell you how Rav Moshe Feinstein answers, and the two pieces really go hand in hand. Shabbos and Moed, what's the connection between Shabbos and the holidays in general? So Rav Moshe explains, Shabbos is a declaration of our belief that there's a creator to the world. Every time we keep Shabbos, we're saying, I believe that there's a God who created the world in 6 days, and rested on the seventh day. What are the mo'adim? What are the holidays? What are the regalim? It's the reminder that that God who created the world is actively involved in influencing the world. So therefore, yes, we have a Pesach, and we have a Sukkot, and we have a Shavuos, because each of those correspond to different events that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did along the way, ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed that he's still involved in running the world. And therefore, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, if you want to have the Emunah Shleima, it's a combination of Shabbos plus Moed. It's Shabbos, it's the belief that there is a creator to the world. And it's Moed, it's the reminder that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved, is responsible for the Hanhagas HaOlam, for guiding and for directing the world. Okay, that's the answer to question number one. But look how it leads into question number two. Why is the discussion of Matnos Aniyim, of giving gifts to the poor, stuck in here in the middle of the holidays. So here's how the piece, it's not exactly how Rav Moshe Feinstein writes it, but here's how I once heard it explained from a local Rav, Rabbi Roberts, who's the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva Gedola here in Tinak. He said, think about it like this. Shabbos. I hope that for most of us, if not all of us, I hope for all of us, what am I saying? I hope for all of us. I hope that Shabbos is a given in your life. I hope it's not a struggle for you to decide if you want to keep Shabbos. Obviously, some people do struggle with keeping Shabbos. But for those of us who are, you know, Sabbath observant, right? It's not like a struggle every Friday to decide, should I keep Shabbos? Should I not keep Shabbos? Am I going to do Shabbos this year? Are we going to do Pesach this year? I don't know. It was a little harder this year for some people, Pesach. But we did Pesach. It wasn't like a question if we're going to have Pesach. We're going to keep Shavuos. We're going to keep Rosh Hashanah. Right? We don't have to think about it so much to decide if that's something that I want to do or not, you know, not going to do. What about giving gifts to the poor? What about when someone comes to your door and they're collecting tzedakah? So now all of a sudden your mind is, you know, is very creative. You're a big thinker. Well, you know, who's to say that this person really deserves it? Maybe I should give my money to someone else or to someone else. Or maybe it's better to give it, you know, to a particular organization instead of giving it to this one individual. Or maybe this, or maybe that, and you know, maybe I gave tzedakah last week, tzedakah again is going to be a lot. Essentially, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, the same emunah that you have in a Kodesh Baruch Hu that gets you to what? To shut down your business for Shabbos. To close your business, to shut down your life, so to speak, to focus on Pesach or Sukkot. And you do it with that simplicity, without overthinking it, without overanalyzing it. It's obvious to you that it's the right thing to do, and it's what a Jew does, and you do it. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, the same thing is true when it comes to tzedakah, when it comes to acts of chesed. Don't be such a chacham, don't be so overly analytical to explain to yourself why I should or shouldn't do the right thing. If it's the right thing, just do it. And again, that's a danger that we face during these days. We want so badly to get, in quotes, the right message from what we've been going through for so many weeks now, that sometimes we overanalyze it to the point that we become so convoluted in our thinking that we're not even sure what to take from the whole thing anymore. So my friends, I beg you not only to not underthink, but don't overthink. Keep it simple. Ask yourself straight and honest, what does Hashem want from me? Like Rosh Raga Feivel Mendelovich said, you don't need to bring a proof from a pasuk. They want me to put their mistake into a pasuk. You don't have to do that. Just ask yourself, honest, what do I need to work on? What do I need to change? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from me? Let's review a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. I know we only have a couple minutes left, and I'm about to wrap up. But let's just review a halacha in Shulchan Aruch together. Because this is the halacha to strike the balance between overthinking and underthinking. Not thinking too much. This is a not thinking enough. This is a simple, simple, truthful way, and it's a halacha. So that means it's the way that we're supposed to do it. It governs our life. How are we supposed to make a cheshbon nefesh? It's a very, very short and interesting chapter in the Shulchan Aruch. If you have a Mishnah Berurah, you can pull it out, you can look it up yourself. It's Simen Reish Lamed Aleph, chapter 231 in the Shulchan Aruch. And the title of the chapter, which is just one paragraph, one si'if, is Shekol Kavanosav Yuyu L'Shem Shemayim. That everything you do, you should do for the sake of heaven. And listen to the words of Rav Yosef Cairo. Im e efshar lo lilmod belo shena sarayim yishan. If you're not able to make it through the day without taking a nap in the afternoon, so take a nap in the afternoon. Okay, interesting. Interesting way to start off. You know, make sure you have enough energy to get through your day. Okay, that's a permission to take a nap for those who need a nap. And then he says, make sure that when you take your nap, you're doing it to strengthen your body for the purpose of serving your Creator. Lahachzik gufo lavoras Hashem yizbarach. And then Rav Yosef Cairo says, you know what? While I'm reminding you that it's okay to take a nap as long as, you know, you do it for the right reason. It can be part of your avodas Hashem. It's a holy thing to do. Taking a nap can be a holy activity. V'chein b'chol ma sheyena b'olam hazeh. Everything you do to enjoy this world, don't do it for your own self-serving pleasure. Try to make it a little bit about God as well. As we know from Mishlei, b'chol derachecha de'ehu. In all of your ways, know Him. Bring Hashem into the conversation. Bring Hashem into the activity. And everything you do should be done l'shem shemayim. And then Rav Yosef Cairo writes a whole list that your eating can be holy, and your drinking can be holy, and your sleeping can be holy, and your walking can be holy, and all of your activities can be holy. And he ends the paragraph by saying, here's the bottom line. Klalo shel davar. Here's the bottom line. If you want to be a good Jew, a thoughtful Jew, who's not insensitive and is cruel like the Rambam said, if you want to be a person who says, I got the message, and Hashem, you can calm down now, you know? You can get back to that sheket after the yira, after all the fear and anxiety. Klalo shel davar. I want to be a type of person who does right. Here's the rule. Chayav adam. Lasum eina velibo al drachav. You need to be a person who pays attention to what he or she is doing. Vilishkol kol maisa v'mazne sichlo. And to just make a simple analysis of what I'm doing. What are the behaviors that I'm involved in? What are the activities of my day? What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? Ukesheroa davar sheyavi lidei avodas habor yisbarach ya'aseyu. And ask yourself, is Hashem happy with me? When I do this, does Hashem like it? And if the answer is no, then don't do it anymore. And if the answer is yes, then keep doing it. If it's something that Hashem is proud of, ya'aseyu. Ve'im lav lo ya'aseyu. Umi shenoheg kein, and a person who acts this way, oved es boro tamid, serves Hashem all day, every day. It's not such a hard equation. It's hard because it requires honesty, and it requires not looking away, and it requires not drowning ourselves with too many voices and too many cheshbonos. It's just a simple equation. Hashem, is this the right thing to do, or is this the wrong thing to do? I asked my daughter the other night, she's a big thinker, I said, is it ever proper for a person to not trust Hashem? Is it ever right to not have bitachon in Hashem? Is that ever a value? Is that ever a positive thing? So she was thinking about it. I said, the answer is yes. The Svarim say the answer is yes. When someone comes to your door and they're collecting tzedakah, that's a time to not believe in Hashem. What does that mean? I could say to the person, you don't need me to provide for you. Hashem's going to take care of you, right? So I could explain why it makes more sense to rely on God than to rely on me. But of course, in that moment, there's actually a mitzvah of sorts to what? To deny God. To say, Hashem's not going to provide for you. Open your wallet and to help that person out. And that's what Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying. The reason that the parsha of Matnos Aniyim is here in the middle of Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos and Yom Kippur and Sukkot, it's packaged as part of that because just like those things are obvious to you, and hopefully for a frum Jew, you don't think too much about deciding, am I going to do Shabbos this week or not do Shabbos this week? When it comes to leaving money for the poor, have faith in Hashem and just do the right thing. Give generously because you know it's right. Don't overthink it and come up with excuses and ways to convince yourself that, you know, that now is not the time or now is not the place. Like the Shulchan Aruch said, if Hashem likes it, then do it. And if Hashem doesn't like it, then don't do it. I want to just end with a story that I heard a number of years ago from Rabbi Mati Miller. He gets a call from a family in England. He's from England, and they say, you know, Rabbi Miller, we have a relationship with you. Our son is completely off the derech. We're at wit's end. We don't know what to do with the kid anymore, and we need your help. You're an inspiring person. You're good. Maybe you can do something for him, and we want to know, like, you know, can you connect to him? Is there something you could do to bring him into your life? So Rabbi Miller says, you know what? Truthfully, you could send him to me. I'm willing to take him in. Let him live by me for a month, and let's see what I can do. Wow, you would do that for us? Yeah, you know, we're old family friends. Okay. So this kid flies to Rabbi Miller and he comes to spend time with Rabbi Miller and his family. And Rabbi Miller says to him, I just want you to know, he told him when he first arrived, I'm not here to sell you anything. I want you to be a part of our home. I want you to feel comfortable to be a part of whatever you want. He said, I'm not going to push any ruchnias on you. You do what you want, do what you're comfortable with. And I just want you to have a positive experience in a nice, you know, in a nice from home. Okay. So he's there for a month. He's living by them for a month. On the last day, he's driving him back to the airport. And he says to him, you know, you've been living by us for a month. And you know I never pushed anything on you. But I feel like I want to ask you if you can do me a favor. Rabbi, what can I do for you? I owe you a lot. What can I do for you? So he says, I want you to wear tefillin on Mondays and Thursdays. I want you to put on tefillin for a couple of seconds, you know, on Mondays and Thursdays. Not every day of the week, Monday and Thursday. So he says, Rabbi, you know I don't do that. So he says, I know you don't do that. And I didn't ask you the whole time you lived in my house to do that. But I took care of you and I loved you unconditionally. And now I'm asking as a favor. I'm asking you to do it for me as a favor. Not because of your religious belief. I'm asking as a favor. I want you to do me this little favor that on Mondays and Thursdays, I want you to put on your tefillin for a couple of seconds, a couple of moments at the very least.
Can you do that for me? So he says, fine, Rabbi, I'll do it for you. He says, I want you to shake on it. Okay, they shake hands on it. He sends him back, and he says, I didn't hear from the guy for a while. He says, all of a sudden, July 7th, 2005, that's when the story took place, he gets a phone call from this young man, and he's crying uncontrollably on the phone. And he says he can't get the words out of his mouth. He says, what happened? What's going on? What happened? So he says, you didn't hear what happened. My friends, what happened? He said, that morning, he said, I was on my way. My father, he said he was living in an apartment. He had his own apartment at the time. And he said, my father used to pick me up every morning to take me to the train station where I would go to work. So he said, my father came to my apartment that morning to pick me up. And I get in the car. We're on the way to the train station. And I realized, shoot, I didn't put on tefillin today. I promised Rabbi Miller I'd put on tefillin. So I said to my father, I got to go back. Why? What's wrong? His parents didn't even know he was wearing tefillin on Monday and Thursday as part of his commitment to Rabbi Miller. He says, I got to go back. I forgot something. I got to go back. All right. It's getting late. He drives him back. He quickly runs into his apartment. He puts on his tefillin for a minute or two, takes them off, gets back in the car. Father takes him back to the train station. He's on the train for about 3 or 4 minutes. He said, all of a sudden, the power goes out on the train. The train stops. What had happened? Britain's equivalent of September 11th took place on July 7th, Thursday, July 7th, 2005. There were three suicide bombers who got onto trains, a coordinated attack. 52 people were killed. 700 people were injured. He said he got on at King's Cross Station. He said, if not for the tefillin, I would have been on one of the trains that exploded. And he's crying on the phone to Rabbi Miller. You saved my life. You saved my life. The tefillin saved my life. Right, Miller told this story, and he said to the group of people who he shared the story with, he said, and I bet you're thinking that after that he probably started wearing tefillin every day. And Rabbi Miller says, I can tell you for a fact, not only does he not wear tefillin every day, I can tell you for a fact that he doesn't wear tefillin even in fulfillment of that commitment anymore. It wore off over time. And he explained two reasons why. He said, first of all, he didn't act on it right away. If he would have taken upon himself right away, maybe to start wearing tefillin right away, who knows, maybe it would have stuck. But he didn't respond in that way for whatever reason. But more than that, right, Miller said, the second reason is even more profound. You know why he doesn't wear tefillin anymore? Because he was doing it for me, he wasn't doing it for himself. He was doing it because I had got him to do it for a period of time. And when you're living your life because someone else told you that this is the way to do it, it's not going to stick. I'm not here to offer any explanations, and I don't think anyone in the world. That doesn't mean you shouldn't consult your Rebbeim, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to Shiurim that are offering answers and speaking to people who you look up to. But more than anything, a person has to look inward to figure out, what is Hashem saying for me? Because you could drown yourself in Shiurim and articles and explanations, and you could walk out of the whole thing having thought a ton about this experience and have not been changed at all. The Chafetz Chaim lamented the fact one time. He said, you know why the Jews in Raden keep Shabbos? Because Jews in Raden keep Shabbos. If you're just doing it because that's, so to speak, societal pressure, and that's like the thing to do, then you're not really getting the message that Hashem is sending to. And the avoda of these days, with this I conclude, the avoda of these days is to ask ourselves, again, what does Hashem want from me? I'm not going to hide under the covers and just close my eyes and wait for it to be over and underthink. I'm going to take the time to actually stop and think, but I'm also not going to overcomplicate something that doesn't have to be so complicated. I have to just follow that recipe of the Shulchan Aruch. What does Hashem want me to do? What makes Hashem proud? What makes a Kadosh Baruch Hu happy? And I bless all of us. I bless each and every one of us that if we make that Cheshbon HaNefesh in the right way, again, it's not just about finding the answer at the end. It's not about solving coronavirus. But it's about going through the process in the right way, thinking in the right way, not selling ourselves short and not making it too complicated, but just being honest and being real and figuring out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to us. So I bless each and every one of us that we should have hatzlacha in getting the message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending to each and every one of us. Thank you very, very, very much. Rabbi Tzin Cement.